A few little housekeeping things before we get started. Be sure to keep the Beulah Land music available. We're going to be singing on that in a while, after the bell. Okay, for next week is chapters 5 and 6, no, 4 and 5. There's an error in 5:7, verse 5:7, chapter 5, verse 7, and it's question number 7. Why is this a major pivotal verse? Change the not to now. And also the question that is referenced there is 4:11, not 4:12. There isn't any 4:11. Do you have a question? I do, but I can... Yeah, okay. I was told that that was not a good thing to do. We'll try it again. I don't know why I'm flipped on there. Just hope for the best. Okay. Question 5:7, or verse 5:7 is a little fixed up there, no problem. All right, I told you I wasn't going to review, I lied to you. Just a little bit of, this isn't really a review, it's look at 119. 119 is an outline that Jesus gives us. Okay. Write therefore the things which thou sawest, and the things which are, and the things which shall come to pass. So there's the highest level of outline that we have here given to us by the Lord. The things which he saw, we've already seen. We already went over them. That was in chapter 1. The things that are will be what we cover today. That's the things that are going on in the churches. And the things that will surely come to pass, that's everything else after that. So I didn't cover that last time. I wanted to cover it. Also, verse 20, which is the next verse, last verse of chapter 1, of the mystery of the seven stars, which you saw in my right hand, the seven golden lampstands. The seven golden lampstands. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks in a lot of versions, lampstands is what it should be, are the seven churches. This is what we call identity metaphor. It's when it says this is that, and it really can't possibly be. So it's a figurative statement. God is love. That's a figurative statement. It communicates something very effectively. Our God is a consuming fire. That's in Hebrews 12, I believe. Is he? It communicates something about him. And so it is with us. We're going to see this particular metaphor over and over and over again. And we need to be very careful that we don't take it literally. Jesus said, "This is my body." And the Roman Catholic Church wants to take that literally to make it some mystical thing that only they know about, even some esoterical knowledge that they have. Okay. So we got the letter to the churches. Seven churches. Oh, wait, there they are. Okay. Now I got another one here. Don't worry about the journey of Paul to Italy or to Rome. That's not the important thing. The important thing here is to see, get the picture. There's the Mediterranean. There's Asia up there and Ephesus. Okay? So you can see where they are, so that when we get in close up on the other, you know, you can see. Gotta go back, but that's it. There's Asia. There's Ephesus, which is hard to read because it's black print. Smyrna, Pergamon, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea. Notice that they're in a clockwise cycle there. Ephesus, supposedly where John went after his exile. And perhaps this is where he lived before his exile. We don't know that for sure, but it would seem a good reason to start with Ephesus. Ephesus is an interesting church. Paul was there for 3 years. That was about 40 years ago, 40 years before John wrote. So what was going on there 40 years ago? What did he say to them? Remember? He says, you're going to have some problems. You're going to be led astray. And the problems are going to be caused by you, elders. You're the ones that are going to cause the problem. You're going to lead the church astray. And I think we begin to see maybe some of those problems even here. All right, so let's turn to our questions. What were they commended for? There were six things they were commended for. And this isn't bad, you think about it now. Their works, their toil and patience, they cannot bear evil men. They tried the false apostles and convicted them. They continued laboring even when they were tired and they did not faint. That's not bad, is it? That's not a bad record. Okay, so we're going to start over here. Do you have number one? Okay. It's verse 2, 4, and 5.
What were the Ephesian Christians commended for?
I've already covered that one. Look at Dan, where it's in italics. There you go. That's good.
And they were commanded to repent, lest their plans
had been changed. Okay. That's good. You covered that well. Remember, we're only going to ask you to comment on the questions that are in italics. Okay? The others I might not cover, but just the ones that are in italics. And also today, the third question, I'll cover that one. Is that a relief? So we will cover one and two. They did a lot of good things, but they had left their first love. And that's about what Paul was talking about, wasn't it? When he said, you know, you're going to have some problems. It's the only church that Jesus threatened. He said, "You better get in line, or I'm going to remove your lampstand." What does that mean? That means they're not going to be a church anymore, right? They're not going to be recognized by Him. They're not going to be a legitimate church. Well, we're going to see there's some churches that were far worse than Ephesus that he didn't remove the lampstand. And you wonder, well, why didn't he threaten them? It seems to me that those churches and those individuals who were faithful and who had a lot of things going for them at one time, and then something happened and they fell away, that there was far more condemnation for them than there was for some of the others that seems like they always had these problems, and you know, you're growing, you're doing good, but you know. Okay, I think that's good. Next one is Smyrna. So the synagogue of Satan's there. I don't think he's talking about within the church. I think he's talking about the Jews causing problems for them. And let's do number two, which would be verse 2:11. You're right. You didn't see anything. That's because it's not there. Okay, there was nothing negative said about the church in Smyrna. What does that show us? What does that prove? Not about them, but about us. It shows it can happen, right? It's possible. Right, very good. I know I've had the feeling at times that it's not possible. Seen so many churches where there's trouble and problems and things like that, you get the feeling after a while, well, that's just the way it is. He's saying, no, it doesn't have to be that way. Okay. What were they in? Shelby mentioned the word in his prayer. It starts with a T. They were in tribulation. Why do I bring that word up? Because it is a false doctrine word. And any false any word that's used for false doctrines, we're going to talk about them. It's called the tribulation. Yeah. We're looking forward to the tribulation. Yeah. Now, go back to chapter 1, look at verse 9. What did John say? We're already in the tribulation. He was in big tribulation. The church at that time was in big tribulation. Some of them were getting killed. They were being persecuted. And we'll get into the details, of course, as we go along. The word tribulation is also used. It's in 2:10. It's also used in 2:22, but in verse 22, Jesus will cause the tribulation. Jesus is going to cause them tribulation. Then the other place when we get to there is in chapter 7. The angel asked John, who are these people who are standing before the altar praising God? And the answer was, they have come out of tribulation. Or the tribulation. The word the is not in the Greek. They have come out of tribulation. So, they're really, as far as Revelation teaches, there's no such thing as what we call, what is called by the false teachers today, the tribulation. That's just a buzz term to get people to worry and get them to follow the false teaching. Smyrna's good. Okay, we're going to Pergamum now. Sure. Ten. Five. Completeness. Yeah. You got five toes and five fingers. A lot of people didn't back then. A lot of them might have been born without some fingers, or they may have gotten those fingers cut off, eaten by an animal, or some punishment that they went through, and they lost their finger. Well,
it makes reference to a 10-day time period.
Right. And another one is times and half a time, which is even shorter. And when it says days, yeah. So the idea there is it's a complete thing, complete, but it's of limited duration. Right. In other words, the number is a relatively small number. And so the time that they're talking about is a relatively small time.
Well, does the tribulation in this place mean trouble?
Yes. They were being persecuted heavily. Throughout the empire, they were being persecuted at this time very heavily. We're going to go start the history next week. We'll try to keep it to 5 minutes at the start of each session. We're going to have five or six different sessions of that, and we'll get to that and see just who it was and why and everything. All right, number three is verse 2:13. It says Satan's throne is there. Let me read you something from history. In 29 BC, that was quite a ways before what we're talking about here. But in 29 BC, the temple of the godhood of Caesar was erected there at Pergamum. And it became the center of Caesar worship, and it was still functioning at this time. Domitian required, that's one of the emperors, required all in the Roman Empire to state Caesar is Lord. And you had to have papers that testified that you had said that. The Christians wouldn't do it. They're not going to call Caesar Lord. And it cost them their lives in a lot of cases. It cost them their lives. That's what we're talking about, tribulation. We don't have that tribulation. We say we have tribulation. We don't have tribulation. Nothing like that. We might someday. Need to be ready for it. The Pergamon proconsul also had what was called the right of the sword. Certain proconsuls or local leaders had the right to kill people. And if they did, nobody said anything. That was their right. Good thing we don't have that today. Still have people getting killed, but it's not legal. Okay, so next is the, at the bottom, well, it's not at the bottom of yours, but it's number four. For verses 14 and 15.
What two things did Jesus have against him? Well, they were falling false doctrine on the doctrine of faith and false doctrine.
The Nicolaitans. Okay. That's it. Two problems. They held the teaching of Balaam. Hopefully you remember that story from, where is it? Numbers 22 through 25. I've got that. That was in your notes. 31:16. So what did Balaam advise? He advises that, I'm not going to curse Israel. No, I can't do that. But if you want them cursed, just get them involved with their neighbor wives and with the women that are around about them. And that would be the end of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the fact that they mentioned Balaam could indicate that there's several members in the church that are basically
right. It could be figurative, just a bad influence. Then you've got the word in verse 15, it says, so The word so, we use it today to mean a conclusion. Premise, so this happened. I've never seen it used that way in the Bible, but maybe it is. I no doubt it is someplace. But usually in the Bible, the word so means likewise. So substituted in there, likewise, okay, like Balak, like Balaam, you got the Nicolaitans there. Let me read something from Adam Clark's commentary. Okay, we don't know what they are because they're not... Okay, that doesn't mean we don't know what they are. It means they're not in the Bible, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about them. Adam Clark's commentary, he said, they were probably a sect of Gnostics. The word Gnostic starts with a silent G. Like the word knowledge starts with a silent K. Gnostics and Gnostics. Yeah. Gnostics means knowledge. They were supposed to have had knowledge. We call it esoteric knowledge. They had knowledge that nobody else had. You want the knowledge, come and talk to us about it. You know. It was sort of a... Okay, they were probably a sect of Gnostics who taught, this is the quote from Adam Clark, who taught the community of wives that adultery and fornications were things indifferent, that eating meats offered to sacrifices was quite lawful, and mixed several pagan rites with the Christian ceremonies. Augustine, Irenaeus, Clemens, Alexandrinus, and Tertullian have spoken largely concerning them. I would say he means written. They wrote, and we can learn from these Christians, our fathers, the Christian fathers. They're not going to lie. They're telling the truth to the best of their ability. Now, that's why he says probably. You know, he's not going to come down and say, well, that was what... But they probably were. And that kind of relates back to, you know, what George was saying. Okay. So much for Nicolaitans. Let's go on to Thyatira. Can you think of anybody in the Bible that was more wicked than Jezebel? If you can, let me know. What happened to her? What did they find of her? Skin of her hands and the skin of her feet. That was it. The dogs got her. She became part of the dog. And that's where she belonged. She was as evil as you can get. And one of the things, of course, was that when her husband really wanted to buy this field, you know, he wanted to do it honestly. She had the man killed. Took the field. Gave it to him like some gift. Okay. Let's look at the next question. Number 6, 224. Okay? This verse is kind of profound and might be a bit confusing. What are the deep things of Satan? Who knows about them? Raise your hand. Some of us know about them. Maybe we shouldn't, but we do. Let me read from what Barnes said about the deep things of Satan. There are doctrines of error and arguments for sin to originate, which seem to be beyond the power of people, and which would appear almost to have exhausted the talent of Satan himself. They evince such a profound knowledge of man, of divine government, of the course of events on earth, and of what our race needs, and they are defended with so much eloquence, skill, learning, and subtlety of argumentation that they appear to lie beyond the compass of human powers. We're not talking about something that was last week. I think we can all say, yeah, there's some really, really bad things going on. Terrible things that we would not bring up, we would not discuss it. They are the deep things of Satan. But this was in the 1830s, 1840s, when Barnes wrote this. Really knew, put it together, didn't they? This was about the time when John Darby came up with the rapture idea. I don't think he did it because he was a Satanist or anything like that, but for sure Satan was involved in that false doctrine, as were the money people of the day who paid for the Scofield Bible. Not much has changed. Who did Jesus throw out of the temple? Money changers. What would we call them today? I'm not saying every banker is the deep things of Satan, but if you want to know what Satan uses to control the world today, that would be a good place to start looking. Do a search on the banking practices of today, and you'll see. The Federal Reserve. Search on the Federal Reserve. And you will say, there's nothing political. I'm not saying anything political here. There's nothing political about them. Shouldn't be. They claim that they're not political. Don't believe the first thing you hear or the first thing you read. Get 5, 6, 10 different videos or whatever. You'll see the same thing. It says the same thing over and over and over. Okay, enough of that. Deep things of Satan. I take it from this verse that those things are not things that we need to get into. He says, I will hold you not responsible. I cast upon you none other burden. None other burden. Just keep being faithful. Just keep doing what you've been doing. E. David had a great lesson a week or so ago. Think on the positive things. Think on the good things. It will help you. You get involved with the deep, dark things, it'll change you. And not for the better either. Okay, Pergamum. No, Thyatira. We have some bad things going on there. And yet, we have some of the biggest promises. He that overcometh, I'm looking at verse 26 now in chapter 2. He that overcometh, he that keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give authority over the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as vessels of the potter broken into shivers, as I also have received of my Father. That's a great promise, isn't it? But look at this next one. I will give him the morning star. What's he talking about? Jesus. Yeah, you can look it up in Revelation 22:16. Jesus said, I am the morning star. It's quite figurative. That's one of those things that we were talking about. I am. Obviously, he's not the morning star. So what is he talking about? Well, we'll cover that when we get to chapter 22. Let's not worry about it now. Let's get into chapter 3. Sardis. Let's see. What is the... Okay. They thought they were alive, but they were dead. I guess there are a lot of churches like that. I really think they're doing great. Look at all the things we're doing. Yeah, we got these programs, those programs. Yeah, on and on and on. But he says, you're dead. You're dead. I don't believe he found anything good about it. Anybody see anything good about this church? So there's nothing that you have has been perfected. All right, but look, let's answer the next question from 3, 4, and 5, and it's question 7.
Can some in a church be saved while the majority are not? And I answered that yes. Each person is judged on their own merits. And what principle does this illustrate? I answered first one, John.
Right. Very good. I like the way we always think alike. Yeah, get it.
It also illustrates that you can't define the universal church, for lack of a better term, as the sum of all the local churches.
Right. It's not. Each church is independent and autonomous. And each church has its own lampstand, right? That lampstand can be removed from any of that. That's something that is not a concept that is understood in the religious world today. Most people are looking for a church. What are they looking for? The right church. We gotta, find the right church. If we find the right church and we join the right church, we'll be saved. Wrong. That's not what you should be looking for. You should be looking for the will of Christ. You should be looking for the conditions of salvation. You should obey those conditions of salvation. And then you'll find it. God will help you find a good, faithful church that you can express your worship and your praise for him. Any other thoughts on that before we get to Philadelphia? Go ahead, George.
Yeah, it says that it says in Ezekiel that the soul is, I think he said it multiple times that the soul that sits shall die,
right. The father shall not inherit the iniquity of the son, neither shall the son inherit the iniquity of the father. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Each one of us, what you're saying, each one of us has to give an account for ourselves and our own, you know, good or bad deeds. All right, we're not going to cover the Laodicea. And the reason for that is that you have heard so many sermons on lukewarm churches and lukewarm Christians that you're probably ready to spew it out of your mouth, too. So I'm not going to feed you that. So we want to talk about Philadelphia. There are no negative things about Philadelphia, the Church of Philadelphia. Look at chapter 3, verse 10. And notice that he's not talking about the church here. And when we sing about Beulah Land, we're not going to be singing about a church or the church or any church. We're going to be singing about ourselves. I. The only word in the whole... Yeah, we're talking about that. The only word in the whole song that's literal. All the rest of the song just about. You'll probably find something. But we'll sing it in just a minute. But let's read from chapter 3, verse 10, starting in verse 10. Because you did keep the word of my patience, I will keep you from the hour of trial, which is to come upon the whole world to try them that dwell upon the earth. So he's going to protect them as individuals. I come quickly, hold fast that which you have, that no one takes your crown. The crown is something an individual wears, not something that a church wears. Verse 12, he that overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out thence no more. I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God in my own new name. He that hath an ear, let him hear. All of the letters conclude with that statement, don't they? And they're not. That's not a statement to the church, is it? A statement to individuals. We've been emphasizing that. So, as we are going to sing this song for the first time, I don't know, maybe the first time for some of you, hopefully some of you know this song. I don't want to sing a solo here. When you go home, be thinking about what this means. What is Beulah Land? What does it have to do with me?